In the heat of June 2012, life in a common Singaporean neighborhood seemed ordinary enough. Kids played at the void decks, while families carried out their daily routines without a second thought. But inside one home, things were about to change. A sister, curious about her 11-year-old brother's phone, stumbled upon something that made her heart race. Text messages from an individual identified as Yap Wang Wah, and the content of these messages raised suspicions. It was entirely inappropriate for an 11-year-old. She asked her brother about it, and what she learned turned their world upside down. It turned out Yap was a stranger he'd met online, someone who was 18 years older, and someone who'd done bad things to him. Shocked and scared, she knew she had to do something. Immediately, they approached the authorities and filed a report. Little did they realize, their brave step towards seeking help would set off a chain of events that would shock the entire nation. 3 months following the filing of the police report, law enforcement officers raided Yap Wang Wah's rented apartment, and their discovery during this operation plunged Yap into infamy, cementing his status as one of the most notorious child predators Singapore has ever seen. Inside Yap's apartment, investigators uncovered a disturbing cache of evidence, a collection of over 2,000 obscene videos stored on his laptop. These recordings depicted extremely indecent interactions between Yap and his young victims, all of which were male. What made the situation even more alarming was his careful organization of these videos, each meticulously catalogued with the names, ages, and the year that he met them. As the details of Yap's crimes came to light, it was obvious that his crimes on the 11-year-old boy was just the tip of the iceberg, and no one could have foreseen the extent of depravity that would grip the nation. You're listening to Heinous, an Asian true crime podcast, brought to you by MediaCorp and produced by 1UP Media. This episode may contain sensitive details and graphic imagery. Listener discretion is advised. Born in 1983 in Ipoh, Malaysia, Yap Wang Wah entered the world as the eldest of three siblings, with a brother and a sister to share his childhood with. However, his upbringing was far from conventional. At the tender age of 8, Yap's family dynamics shifted dramatically when his father departed for New Zealand, leaving his mother to shoulder the responsibility of raising the children alone. Left behind in Malaysia, Yap's mother found herself thrust into the daunting role of single parenthood. The challenges she faced were immense, particularly in the context of 1990s Ipoh, where economic opportunities were limited and social support systems were scarce. Financial hardships often loomed over the household, casting a shadow over their day-to-day lives. Growing up in a single-parent household presented its challenges for young Yap. Without the guidance of a father figure, he navigated the complexities of adolescence under the sole care of his devoted mother. This is a frequent observation among many criminals. A lack of guidance and support during childhood can render an individual exceptionally susceptible to manipulation and exploitation. And that's precisely what happened during his time in primary school at the age of 12. In primary school, Yap encountered a distressing situation when his male mathematics teacher began engaging in inappropriate acts with him. According to reports, his teacher would sexually abuse him at least once or twice a week, and this pattern persisted for a period of 9 months until he completed his schooling. At just 12 years old, Yap likely felt isolated and powerless in the face of the teacher's actions, unsure of how to process the trauma he was experiencing. It is assumed that Yap never disclosed the incidents that occurred during his primary school years and continued his education without addressing the trauma. Following his academic journey, he pursued a career path as a quality assurance engineer. In 2009, he was employed at ASM Technology in Singapore, an electronics manufacturing company, where he was described to have demonstrated dedication and professionalism in his work. His colleagues call him Travis at work, and he was characterized as a reserved individual who preferred to keep to himself, seldom engaging in extensive conversations. However, none of them could have imagined the darkness that Travis was hiding beneath his exterior. Despite his outwardly calm and composed nature, Yap Wang Hua concealed a disturbing secret. In 2009, during a period when social media platforms were still relatively novel concepts, Facebook was rapidly gaining traction, especially among the younger generation, who were quick to embrace its features and connectivity. Yap Wang Hua was part of this trend, having not just one, but several Facebook accounts, each under a different name and age. However, these multiple accounts weren't just for harmless fun. Yap Wang Hua had a disturbing agenda behind them. He used these accounts to scour the internet for young boys who lived near his rental apartment or attended schools nearby. One of the accounts he made embodied the persona of an 18-year-old polytechnic student operating under the aliases Y Loon or Loon. It was pretty clear that he had carefully devised this facade. But what was he trying to do? Initially, Yap embarked on a relentless spree of sending friend requests on Facebook, carefully selecting his targets rather than indiscriminately reaching out to just anyone. His criteria were clear. The individuals he sought were preferably young boys aged between 11 to 15, and he preferred them to be situated near his residence along New Upper Changi Road. Upon establishing contact with his selected victims, Yap would initiate communication by sending them a message, introducing himself as an older brother figure or mentor. But the question is, why would these young boys respond to Yap's messages or accept his Facebook friend request? Well, there are several reasons why they may find themselves compelled to interact with his messages. Apart from the fact that the boys interacting with him were unaware of his true age, many adolescents in this age bracket frequently seek validation and acceptance from older peers or role models as they navigate the complexities of growing up. You see, Yap's portrayal of himself as an older, more experienced individual could be seen as appealing and authoritative, fostering a sense of admiration and trust among impressionable youths. Additionally, teenagers may be curious about the experiences and perspectives of older individuals, leading them to engage in conversations with someone like Yap. They may also be seeking guidance or simply looking for someone to talk to who seems understanding and approachable. However, the young boys he conversed with remained unaware that his intentions were anything but innocent. For weeks or even months on end, Yap engaged in prolonged online conversations with his victims, frequently juggling multiple conversations simultaneously. These discussions encompassed a wide array of subjects, including hobbies, movies, sports, and computer games, creating an illusion of harmless camaraderie. Yet, concealed within these seemingly innocuous exchanges, Yap had always managed to steer the conversation towards a more sensitive topic, particularly sex. As Yap and his potential victims forged deeper connections through their online interactions, he would gradually arrange physical meetings under the guise of offering gifts, playing computer games, or providing tips on bodybuilding. It was during these face-to-face encounters that the horror unfolded, revealing the true nature of Yap's intentions. Once Yap had effectively persuaded a boy he had been talking with on Facebook to meet him in person, he would provide them with an address and assert that the meeting was solely for the sake of friendship. Under this pretense, Yap would manipulate the trust he had built online and lure them into a trap of deceit and manipulation. According to reports, when Yap met his victims in person, he would coerce them into consenting to various nefarious acts. These acts often included oral sex, sodomy, and molestation. It occurred in a range of locations, spanning from public restrooms within bustling shopping malls to the perceived safety of his own residence. Sometimes, Yap took advantage of his unsuspecting victims by booking hotel rooms, using them as a setting to entice and ensnare the boys into his web of deception. In all of these meetups, his heinous deeds were conducted even when his victims were reluctant. Many reports state that his victims said no, cried, or insisted that they were not interested. Most disturbingly, he would consistently bring his phone or camera to every encounter, using it to record each interaction. Over the period from November 2009 to June 2012, Yap Wang Wah executed his nefarious scheme, victimizing a total of 30 boys. To put this into perspective, it equates to almost one victim per month over the course of 3 years. His MO remained consistent throughout. He would initiate contact with a new boy on Facebook, engaging in conversations over a period to establish a facade of trust. Once this trust was secured, he would arrange a face-to-face meeting, during which he would subject his victims to heinous acts of sexual abuse. Each occurrence involved a minor, and almost all of them were recorded on video. Persistently engaging in these acts over 3 years raises an alarming question. Why did none of his victims say anything about it? The answer, however, is far from straightforward. There are many reasons why victims of child sexual abuse don't speak up on it, at least in a timely manner. Firstly, many young boys of that age may not recognize sexual abuse due to a lack of comprehensive sex education. Without understanding the concept of sex and perverted behavior from adults, they may not realize that they are being exploited. Additionally, some experts suggest that children can become confused if they experience physical pleasure or emotional intimacy during the abuse, further complicating their ability to recognize and report the abuse. Furthermore, offenders commonly employ manipulation tactics to coerce their victims into silence. They may convince the child that they won't be believed or that they are somehow responsible for the abuse and will be punished for it. These threats can feel very real to children of that age, especially considering the power dynamic the offender holds over them. In the case of Yap Wang Wah, many details of his crimes were never publicly disclosed, making it difficult to ascertain why his victims did not speak up immediately. In the majority of cases involving the 30 victims, it's apparent that many exhibited reluctance and even cried when subjected to Yap's disturbing actions. However, what remains uncertain is whether Yap resorted to threats to ensure their silence. It is plausible that Yap employed intimidation tactics, coercing his victims into remaining silent by instilling fear and threatening repercussions if they were to speak out against him. Alternatively, it's conceivable that victims feared the potential consequences of Yap's videotaping of the incidents, worrying that he would exploit the footage as blackmail against them. In early 2010, Yap Wang Wah found himself in the midst of his criminal activities, preparing to encounter another victim. This time, it was a 13-year-old boy who had just finished his day at school. Through their messages on Facebook, the two had arranged to meet at the Haogang Swimming Complex. While the exact purpose of their meeting remains unclear, it is believed that Yap had planned to present the boy with a gift. When the boy arrived, clad in his school uniform, Yap met him with a smile and promptly directed him to follow him to the restroom. The boy wouldn't know it, but Yap had brought along his camera and was ready to film the unfolding events with sinister intent. That's coming up in the next episode. Heinous, an Asian true crime podcast, is brought to you by MediaCorp and 1UP Media. This episode was produced and written by Guang Jin, edited by Alex, narrated by Jason, audio experience by Ethan Sam, additional engineering by Ashley from 1UP Media. Special thanks to executive producer Danny Cordy from MediaCorp. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next one.